All right. Good day. Beautiful day out there. I hope it is where you are as well. And it's funny, as I was about to come on, I just realized last night my wife and I went out to dinner and started to talk about all the dumb things people do who don't realize the consequences at stake, not checking for liens on homes, not looking at banks, not doing the proper shopping as you should do with such an important investment, whether you're borrowing money, looking at, I mean, it just goes on and on. And I think one of the most, underestimated issues here, and I have to tell you, I'm guilty. I never really gave any thought about it, was to check the bank's viability that you're dealing with. And you need someone to do it in the sense of bank ratings and research. That's why I was spending so much time with a very bank in Rhode Island. And I want to give you the website. It's veribanc.com regarding bank ratings and research and just how important this is. And rejoining us again this week, as he's been doing every week, is Michael Heller. He is the president. Michael, good morning. It's great to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be here again. Thanks for inviting me back, Stu.
Can you just reemphasize the statement I made that too many people take these things for granted or don't even think about them?
That's true to a degree. Lots of times we're so busy, we've got so much logistics on our plate that we just don't think about these kinds of checks and balances, if you will, and the downstream effect they could have by not checking on it. So for people that aren't familiar with us, we are a bank rating and research firm. We can tell you how safe your bank or credit union is. We are completely unbiased. In other words, we have no potential for a conflict of interest, because no bank or credit union has ever paid us to rate them. You won't find any click-through fees on our click-through links on our website, so you're guaranteed no conflict of interest. Our ratings model is able to detect over 99% of all bank failures, and usually at 6 months in advance. Last week, we had talked about the big S&L failure of Washington Mutual that happened during the banking crisis. We had that pegged over a year in advance. So the model works both for the smaller banks as well as the mega banks like the Washington Mutuals of the world.
Do people know out there that whether or not the bank and its regulators are going to report on an imminent failure?
No, Stu. No bank, as you can imagine, is ever going to know that the regulators are going to come in, usually on a Friday afternoon, and close them down. Usually they've made that decision, if they have the time, 60 to 90 days in advance. And, of course, the bank's not going to tell you because they're not going to know. They're usually caught by surprise, although the regulators aren't surprised. And, again, as I mentioned, the regulators usually, through an examination process, we'll have earmarked that particular institution, and they contact one of their divisions to try to find banks in the area that will be willing and are able to take either the assets of the bank, which for banks are loans and lines of credit, and their liabilities, which, again, for a bank are their deposits. Which that's one of the areas that I think a lot of people aren't really thinking about today, in that if you have, let's say you've got a line of credit, you're a business and you have a line of credit, or you have college tuition or an addition coming on and you go get a home equity line of credit. Well, just remember the amount of time you had to go through to visit the branch, fill out their forms, provide them with, if you're a business, audited financials, and if you're a consumer, the paperwork you had to provide them. It usually takes hours to go through that process. So you've established your line of credit, or your home equity line of credit if you're a consumer. And if your bank fails, the bank that assumes it, and again, that's the best case scenario, if the FDIC can find a bank in the neighborhood or in the area to take over your bank, usually they try to take not only all the assets, which are the loans and lines of credit, but as well as the deposits, but they are under no obligation. And I want to underscore that. The assuming bank is under no obligation to take that line of credit or home equity line of credit and the way it is. And in most cases, they will re-underwrite it, which means now you have to go through that process all over again. Usually the result is lower lines of credit limits and different types of in more onerous covenants. So I want people to understand that our service not just is available for people that have maybe CDs or money market accounts or payroll accounts that they are concerned or should be concerned through a due diligence effort, but we can also provide that same type of analysis and assessments of how how safe your bank is if you've established either a line of credit if you're a business or a home equity line of credit if you're a consumer.
It used to be $100,000 was guaranteed by the FDIC, then it went up to $200,000. So if someone's got $1 million in cash, and I mean, they want to keep this very concentrated and focused, and you know, I know to a lot of people it sounds like a lot of money, but there are a lot of people with $1 million in cash. Should they put $250,000 in each of four different banks?
Well, there's a number of ways you can monitor or parse out your risk, depending upon what your strategy needs to be. That's certainly one way. You can park $250,000 in each bank, or you can set it up under different ownership rules. The FDIC looks at account ownership when they determine the level of insurance. So, for example, you and your wife, you could have a joint account for $250,000. Stu Taylor could have his own ownership account. That would get you another $250,000. And your wife could have her own account, and that would be another $250,000. So you could actually, between the two of you, set up three accounts, each with different ownership, and you'd have a total, in that case, of $750,000. Now, some people will ask, well, but, you know, I want to think about, you know, what happens if something happens to me or my wife. Well, you can always add a beneficiary if you have children, or even if you want to provide for a company or I can't think of the word now, where you donate money to a charity. They can be listed as a beneficiary. So that's two ways you can cover that risk. The third way is we have what we call our blue ribbon list of banks. These are the safest banks in the country. We've only had one blue ribbon fail on us at the time that they were designated as a blue ribbon. So that has virtually eliminated bank failure risk if you're looking at blue ribbon banks. So there's three ways that you can mitigate that type of risk, Stu.
All right. Can't believe how fast the clock has gone here. We had so much more to cover here. We're going to cover it next week. So instead of me posing a question, a formal question here with about 20 seconds to go, you got about 15 to 20 seconds just to make a short concluding statement.
Sure. I'm happy to answer questions. If you folks that are listening have any questions about the banking industry in general, we have a number of reports that are free on our website that provide insight into the banking industry from a high-level standpoint over the past 3 years. It's very
all right, and that's verybank.com, spelled with a C at the end of bank. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you,
look forward to chatting with you next week.
All righty. Thanks again.
Stay on.